Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a classic case that really illustrates the push and pull between running a business and, you know, the right to enjoy your own property without undue disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
We're diving into Big Lane v. Under the Hill Corp, a Mississippi Supreme Court decision that's, well, particularly relevant for you law students out there as it unpacks the nuts and bolts of private nuisance and tortious interference.
Exactly. This case isn't just like dusty legal precedent. It's a fantastic real-world example of how these abstract legal principles play out in everyday life.
Right.
Our goal in this deep dive is to go beyond just the facts and the ruling.
Right.
We want to understand the why behind the court's decision and what it tells us about the balancing act inherent in property law.
Okay, so let's set the stage. We're in Natchez, Mississippi, a city, you know, steeped in history. Imagine James and Nancy Big Lane living above their gift shop.
Okay.
Right next door, the Under the Hill Saloon has been a fixture since, what, 1975? Known for its lively atmosphere, often featuring live music with the doors and windows thrown wide open.
And for the Big Lanes, who moved in back in 2002, this presented a significant challenge. It wasn't just the occasional loud patron. We're talking about consistent, amplified live music just spilling out from the saloon.
Yeah.
Despite their own efforts to soundproof their living space, the level of noise became a real intrusion on their daily lives.
It got to the point where Mrs. Big Lane actually had to, like, leave her home on weekends just to find some peace. Think about that, being unable to enjoy your own property, even unable to host family because of the noise next door. It really highlights the severity of the impact.
Definitely.
And they didn't just jump straight to a lawsuit, did they? They tried to find a solution first.
That's a crucial point, yeah. The Big Lanes made attempts to address the issue directly with the saloon owners. They even invested in soundproofing measures themselves, hoping to, you know, mitigate the noise.
Uh-huh.
When these efforts proved insufficient, the situation escalated, leading to the Big Lanes taking the, well, perhaps ill-advised step of blocking parking lots used by the saloon's customers.
Which, understandably, didn't exactly de-escalate things. This brings us to the legal arena. The Big Lanes filed suit against Under the Hill Corp, arguing that the saloon's operation constituted a private nuisance.
Mm.
And unsurprisingly, the saloon responded with a counterclaim, alleging tortious interference with their business operations due to the parking blockade.
So the case initially went to the Chancery Court of Adams County. Interestingly, the court sided with the Big Lanes on their nuisance claim, acknowledging the substantial disturbance caused by the noise.
Okay.
They issued an order requiring the saloon to take steps to reduce the noise, specifically by keeping doors and windows closed when live music was playing.
But that wasn't the end of it, was it? The Chancery Court also found the Big Lanes liable for tortious interference because of their parking lot antics.
Right.
Although they only awarded nominal damages, a symbolic $500.
Just $500.
So both sides, feeling they hadn't fully prevailed, appealed to the Mississippi Supreme Court.
Right. And here's where we really get into the heart of property law. The Supreme Court's analysis of private nuisance is particularly insightful. Now, for those of you sitting for the bar, remember that a private nuisance is a non-trespassory interference with another's private use and enjoyment of land.
Non-trespassory. Okay.
It has to be both substantial and unreasonable.
Okay, so the court had to determine, was the noise coming from the Under the Hill Saloon substantial enough to legally qualify as a private nuisance? And if so, was it unreasonable under the circumstances? What evidence tipped the scales on the substantial aspect?
Well, the expert testimony regarding the noise levels was critical here. It demonstrated that the decibel levels emanating from the saloon significantly exceeded what would be considered acceptable or normal in a residential setting.
So actual measurements.
Actual measurements. But it wasn't just about the numbers. The court also looked at the tangible impact on the Big Lanes' lives, the disruption to their daily routines, Mrs. Big Lane having to leave her home. This real-world impact provided concrete evidence of a substantial interference going beyond, you know, mere annoyance.
And what about the unreasonable element? I mean, you're living next to a business, a saloon no less, that's been around for a while. Doesn't that imply a certain acceptance of some level of noise?
That's a very valid point. And the court certainly considered the context of the historic district and the fact that it's a mixed-use area. However, the key to the unreasonableness finding was the avoidable nature of the saloon's conduct.
Ah, avoidable.
Yes. By regularly having live music with open doors and windows, they were amplifying the noise to a level that went beyond what might be considered typical or necessary for their business operations. The court essentially said, look, You have a way to mitigate this harm without fundamentally changing your business.
So it wasn't just that there was noise, but that the way the noise was being produced and projected was deemed unreasonable.
Precisely. Think of it like a neighbor who decides to, I don't know, practice the drums at full volume at 3 a.m. every night.
Right.
The drumming itself isn't illegal,
yeah,
but the timing and the volume make it an unreasonable intrusion on your peace and quiet. Similarly, the court saw the saloon's open doors and windows as an unnecessary amplification of the noise, making it unreasonable in the context of its residential neighbors.
And this is where that balancing test that courts often use in nuisance cases comes into play, right?
Exactly. Courts weigh factors like the location of the properties, the severity of the interference, and the social utility of the defendant's conduct. While a saloon has some social utility, sure. The harm it was causing and the fact that this harm could be reasonably mitigated tipped the balance in favor of the Big Lanes on the nuisance claim.
And wasn't there a particularly impactful quote from Justice Diaz regarding this?
Yes. Justice Diaz articulated this point clearly, stating that even lawful businesses can become nuisances if they cause material injury and substantial annoyance. It's a powerful reminder that the right to conduct business is not absolute and must be balanced against the rights of neighboring property owners to enjoy their land.
Okay, so the nuisance claim held up. But let's turn to the saloon's counterclaim of tortious interference. The Chancery Court had found the Big Lanes liable, even if only for that small sum. What did the Supreme Court have to say about that?
This aspect of the case hinges on the essential elements of a tortious interference claim.
Yeah.
Generally, you need to prove that the defendant acted maliciously, intentionally interfered with a business relationship or expectancy, and that this interference caused actual damages.
Actual damages. Key phrase. And in the Big Lanes case.
Well, the Supreme Court found that while the Big Lanes actions in blocking the parking lot were intentional and perhaps even, you know, malicious.
Maybe a little bit.
Maybe. The saloon failed to provide sufficient evidence of actual financial losses resulting from this interference.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, there was even some indication that the saloon's revenue may have actually increased during the period the parking was blocked.
Yeah.
Possibly due to other factors like increased riverboat traffic, bringing more patrons to the area.
So even though the Big Lanes intentionally created an obstacle for the saloon's customers, because the saloon couldn't demonstrate a tangible financial harm, their claim for tortious interference just fell apart.
Precisely. The Supreme Court reversed the Chancery Court's ruling on this point, emphasizing that nominal damages, that symbolic recognition of a wrong, but without proof of actual harm, are insufficient to sustain a claim for tortious interference in Mississippi.
Wow.
It's a critical lesson for anyone who might be involved in business litigation. You need to be able to demonstrate concrete financial harm. You got to show the loss.
Gotcha. Now, Justice Dickinson offered a concurring opinion. He agreed with the overall outcome of the case, but had a slightly different line of reasoning, right? What was that about?
That's right. Justice Dickinson concurred with the majority's decision saloons a nuisance interference claim dismissed. But he raised some interesting points regarding the analysis used to reach those conclusions.
Okay, what were his main points of divergence?
He primarily focused on two areas. First, he felt that the majority's analysis of the parking lot blockade might have oversimplified the issue. Because the blockade involved areas that were publicly accessible, it kind of blurred the lines of the Big Lanes' right to exclude others from their property. It wasn't quite straightforward private property.
Okay. That makes sense. Public access complicates things.
It does. Second, he argued that the nuisance ruling should have been more narrowly focused on the overwhelming evidence of noise disturbance and its impact on the Big Lanes, rather than delving into broader discussions of property rights doctrines.
So his perspective was more, look, the noise was clearly the problem. Let's stick to that specific evidence. Essentially, yeah. He believed the core issue was the demonstrable harm caused by the excessive noise, and that the ruling could have been more directly grounded in that specific evidence. Justice Dickinson's concurrence is a really valuable illustration for law students.
Definitely.
That even when judges agree on the final decision, they can arrive at that decision through different legal analyses and with different interpretations of the relevant legal principles. It really highlights the nuanced nature of legal reasoning.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Big Lane v. Under the Hill Corps, what are the key takeaways for our listeners, particularly those who are on a path to becoming legal professionals?
Well, for those interested in property law, this case reinforces the principle that while property owners have the right to use and enjoy their land, that right is not absolute. Businesses, even in commercially zoned areas, have a responsibility to operate in a way that doesn't cause unreasonable and substantial harm to their neighbors.
And this case clearly shows that failing to take reasonable steps to mitigate avoidable harm, like the excessive noise here, can lead to a finding of private nuisance.
And for those future litigators in the audience, what's the lesson there?
The Supreme Court's reversal of the tortious interference claim serves as a critical reminder about the importance of proving actual damages. Intentional actions alone, even if arguably malicious, are not enough to sustain such a claim. You need concrete evidence of financial or operational harm directly resulting from the interference.
Right.
Nominal damages simply won't cut it in Mississippi. You need proof.
And looking at the bigger picture, what does this case tell us overall?
This case really exemplifies how the legal system strives to pragmatically balance competing interests, the right of individuals to peaceful enjoyment of their property versus the right to conduct business. The court's ultimate ruling requiring the saloon to close its doors and windows during live music was a relatively balanced solution.
Yeah, seems reasonable.
It aimed to protect both the Big Lane's peace and the saloon's ability to operate. A practical fix.
So, to quickly recap, our deep dive into Big Lane v. Under the Hill Corps has shown us the threshold for establishing a private nuisance, particularly focusing on those elements of substantial and unreasonable interference.
Yep.
We also learned a crucial lesson about the necessity of demonstrating actual damages to succeed on a claim of tortious interference.
Exactly. This case provides a practical and, I think, memorable illustration of fundamental property law principles in action. And, you know, Justice Dickinson's concurring opinion underscores the fact that legal analysis isn't always a monolithic process. There can be different paths and different reasoning, even when there's agreement on the final outcome.
Definitely food for thought. And on that note, here's something to consider as you continue your legal studies. How might the outcome of Big Lane v. Under the Hill Corps have differed if the Big Lane's property was located in a purely residential area far removed from any commercial activity?
Good question.
Conversely, what if the Under the Hill Saloon was situated in a well-established entertainment district where a higher level of ambient noise is generally accepted? What are the evolving expectations of noise and neighborly coexistence as our urban environments continue to blend residential and commercial spaces? It's definitely something worth pondering.
Absolutely. The context matters so much.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive.